I'll call our meeting to order. Please join me in pledging allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson has asked to be excused. Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chak?
Here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery has also asked to be excused. Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. Bankasy?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Kaplink-Alaire?
Present.
13 members present.
Petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
We have no special orders of the day. Before I call on the public for privilege of the floor, and I hope I don't have to be doing this every meeting, I do want to take a moment of silence. One of our community leaders, Ed Conley, passed away on February 6th. Ed was the mayor of Ithaca for about 8 years. He served on this legislature for 2 years, and he was on the town of Ithaca board for 8 years, among a long span of 30 years of public service. So please take a moment of silence to remember his family. Thank you very much. We have time for privilege of the floor from the public. If you'd like to speak on any issue, please state your name and speak clearly into the mic. We have one person who signed up in advance, but that doesn't preclude anyone else from speaking. Joel Herndon.
My name is Joel Harlan.
Harlan, excuse me.
I'm from Newfield. I wish you good luck on what the governor's coming down on, medical and all that other stuff that's going to hit the middle class and the poor, because we're in deep crap nationwide. But I've been speaking to some of you. I don't see any of you, the common council and some of the representatives. If you want to do the walk, if you want to do the talk, you got to do the walk. I see you guys at events like GX, Martin Luther King, Beverly Martin, Southside Community Center. But I very seldom see you down at Soup Kitchen, and that's where it's at. You're up here, but you don't want to get down to the lower level, where the mental illness, people homeless, drug addicts, alcoholics, and they have different kinds of disorders. This is where you got to be to find out what people are really feeling. You got to get down to reach them and talk to them. And they got to get to know you. I'm going to be passing around a movie to Carol Peterson and Marsh Ford. It's about a movie called The Titans. It's a racism movie, but it turns out to be positive. And that's what we got to do, is work on the negatives, get rid of the negative to make it positive. But the only way to do it is if you guys got to come down and reach the lowest level of the street. You can solve a lot of problems of crime that way. You got to become a street rat to get to know the street rat. You got to dress like them. You got to talk like them. You got to go out and meet with them, including down the jungle. The Friendship Center is another one that John Ward would like to have you all come down and visit and learn about it. Don't go talking about, you know, middle class. You're hurting. It's down below. There's a lot of people that's got negative attitudes about life that you guys got to come out and work with it. Because I see it all the time. I deal with it all the time. And you got, we all got, I can't do anything because I'm not a representative. You know, but I can lead you and we can try to solve the problem because a lot of us were losing the activities in this town. College kids have everything. What we're in and living in the county is what? Cornell College Town and Ithaca College is in the Jetson area. At the same time, the same town, the town is in the Flintstone area. We're behind time. We're losing that, and a lot of people don't have activities much anymore in the wintertime. You know, it would be nice if we could have a state-of-the-art neighborhood house with a pool around, you know, a building around that pool around Alex Haley and use that all around for all kinds of things in the wintertime. And, you know, I mentioned this to Marshall Ford a couple times. That's a Band-Aid station. Needs fixing and repair. Why not make a state-of-the-art sports center for our own selves? Well, you know, over Marco Platt. Give more things to do to people. We don't have much bowling alley, pool halls. We're losing meat, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Ponderosa, all America foods. I see King Buffet's gone. Pizza Hut is up there on the hill. This town's losing a lot, but it's not getting much back. But vegetarian hippie crap and Thai and Chinese food. You know, we're going to start thinking about ourselves getting it back. We're getting recognition from around the nation in a lot of magazines. But still, if they only realize, we're still behind time on a lot of things. We're losing it. Instead of getting it back, well, I came to you to tell you, I've asked several of you to come down to the soup kitchen, get to know people, get to, you know, have them get to know you, and become friends, and we can finally help out with each other. And you'll find out what's going on. Well, you're never going to know if you're going to go middle class type style like Martin Luther King or GAC or Southside Community Center type style. That's up above. You're not dealing down there, and you represent all these people.
Thank you for the invitation, Joe.
You know what I mean? It's not fair if you got representation down below, and you're not even down there.
Thank you. Anyone else here wish to speak on privilege of the floor of the public?
My name is Bethany Schroeder. I have a prepared statement for you. I'm here today to represent the Ithaca Health Alliance and its project, the Ithaca Free Clinic. The Health Alliance was established in 1997 in an effort to meet the needs of people, typically working people, without insurance options. In most cases, these people were unable to afford the purchase of health insurance on their own, and their employers didn't offer insurance to them as a benefit of employment. Although the grants and loans benefit offered by the Health Alliance is modest, it is affordable at $100 a year, and many of the Alliance's original members remain members today. In 2006, the Health Alliance members, in collaboration with a group of community health care providers and workers, opened the free clinic, where people have since been able to get care at no cost whatsoever. In the first year of operation, we anticipated completing 350 visits. Instead, we completed 880. In 2007, we completed 1,880 visits at our clinic, and this year we have just completed 2,091. The clinic serves new patients, and it also provides primary care for approximately 1,600 patients annually. As we find volunteers to meet the needs, we expand care, and we now offer a variety of conventional medical and complementary services. I am here today because some pundits maintain that the economy has been in decline for the past several months to a year. According to our clinic visitors, the economy has been one of the primary sources of their suffering for several years, and the effects become more and more intolerable to them and to us, their advocates. Many recent patients and their families come to us because they have lost employee and family benefits on the job, or worse, they have lost their jobs altogether and have not yet completed documentation for Medicaid and may not be able to do so for a variety of personal reasons. Many of these people are hungry. Some are without permanent shelter. Nearly 90% of our free clinic visitors earn less than 50% of the household-adjusted median family income. More than 63% of our visitors live in Ithaca proper. 72% are between the ages of 20 and 50. And thus, these are people in the prime of their lives, often without gainful employment, without insurance, sometimes without hope. We must do more for these people, and I ask you to represent them in finding relief for themselves and their families. I want to thank Representative Robertson for encouraging those of us in the community with concerns like this to come and see you. I assure you that we will come to see you on a regular basis in representation of the patients at the free clinic. Thank you.
Thank you, Bethany. If you want to pass your statement in, it can be circulated as well.
Sure.
And Dami, before you speak, I see that our poet laureate is here, who was named last session of the legislature. I didn't know if Jay wanted to speak or Brett wanted to introduce him. It's up to you how you want to proceed.
Hi. Yeah, it's great to be here. And idea that creative work is rooted in a place at its most healthiest is an old one. And I'm really honored and humbled to serve this community in that way.
Jay, why don't you just introduce yourself again? Not everyone knows.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm Jay Leeming, Tompkins County Poet Laureate for this year, for 09. And I grew up here and moved back about 5 years ago. So I thought I'd read you two poems. So here's one about a waterfall, since we're in Tompkins County. It involves a story that took place at Tagannock Falls, and the poem is called At the Falls. The river loud and roaring today, the waterfall a thunderstorm that never moves. Clouds of spray rinse fallen sycamore leaves for hours. Years ago, an abandoned mill house was swept away by this river in flood, swallowed whole, carried downstream and thrown over the fall's high edge. Miraculous how that building was once a blueprint spread out on a desk, was once lines on paper and pine trees rooted in earth. Trees felled and then cut into planks, pounded together nail by nail. Carpenters sweated to cut those boards, worked to build the frame tight so the mill would stand through years of hard storms and winter wind. But the river had its own work to do, its own craft of roaring and taking. Here in the ripsaw crash of this water, I feel the grip of larger pattern. How all things are shattered out of themselves, broken and gathered up. How one day rain was added to rain until that whole ruined house came showering out of the air. And here's one more for you. This is called History, and I would offer to you in the spirit of thinking about things in new ways, I suppose. History. It turns out that the first white man in North America wasn't Columbus. It was a Viking from Jorvik who left his mark on a boulder in Nova Scotia, and that even he was preceded by a Basque from Cordoba who sailed here in 784. It turns out the Aztecs made it across the Atlantic in 500 BC, landing in England to worship Quetzalcoatl in the rain-shrouded moors of Devon. It turns out things are different, surprising, not like you thought. The Laplanders of Norway were in North Dakota in the year 204, bringing with them a gospel written in Sanskrit by Christ's twin brother. Zulu tribesmen voyaged to the North Pole long before the last ice age. They brought with them abacuses and bells made of stone, also small machines remarkably similar to lasers. It turns out the Declaration of Independence was originally written in Celtic by Duke Ellington and Mao Zedong, then translated into English by the Druids of Mexico. The Atlas in tatters, usual wisdom shredded, flummoxed. Muddy Waters is the secret author of the Tao Te Ching. Emily Dickinson, the first translator of the Egyptian Book of the Dead. The Boston Tea Party started by Confucius. The assassination of Kennedy accomplished by Merlin. The hydrogen bomb invented by the Mayans of Germany. And whose story is it you're going to believe? And what dream of fact is this from which you have yet to awake? And where do you come from, O thread in history's rug? O water drop far from the sea? O man or woman kept and caught, imprisoned in a story written by others, wandering through someone else's dream of the world? Thank you very much.
Thank you, and continue to edify and elevate us throughout this year. Others who wish to speak on the privilege of the floor? Dami?
Thank you, myself. I really appreciate it. I may not have enough flyers, but if anybody didn't get it, I'm willing to print out and give it to them. I'm Dami Herat from Women's Opportunity Center. When I got Martha's email, I thought I have an obligation to let you all know the condition of the state as well as what we see here. For the past 20 years, we have been bringing over 600,000 federal and state money to our community and help participants who belong to these two categories, displaced homemakers. I'm sorry, I have a little social problem. And Bridge Program, which is the TANF population, and 200%. And we have been, last year we helped over 199 women to get jobs, which added over 3 million to our community. And we see almost double that amount coming through our door. And every day somebody is coming because their partner lost the job or they lost the job. And unfortunately, the funding I'm getting have criteria that I have to meet to help somebody. And we got yesterday, 5 women came. Day before, probably 10 people who do not qualify for our programs, who had been working 15 years, who need to get the resume updated, who need to get some leads because they lost the jobs, are coming through our way. And I'm trying to find other funding to help these people. It is really a sad situation. Women who qualify for our program, also some of them, the new people who are coming, have been never used the system. So they don't know where the food pantries. They don't know much about how to survive. Their income went from $2,000 a month to $300 a month, kind of a difference. So it's really chaos what we see in our office because we don't have enough staff to support. On top of all that, we are not in the governor's budget, current budget. I'm fighting for it. I have been going to Albany almost every Monday, Tuesday. And what I'm sending actually are some things we prepared to take to Albany. There are 22 centers in New York State Displaced Homemaker Program. There are 17 Bridge Program. So the Displaced Homemaker Program is currently not in the governor's budget. The Bridge Program is less $2 million in the budget. So we don't know what the future is. So we are fighting. I'm doing my best. But I just want to let you all know this is the story of the... I mean, the county is, as somebody mentioned, is graded as a very fine place to live and no impact, but it is not true. We don't want to believe the rosy picture. We are seeing it, we are experiencing it, and if the budget doesn't come through and we don't get funding, I don't know what. I don't want to even think there and think negatively. I'm sure we are going to get funded, and I appreciate the county support. And when, if I needed to write, for you all to write support letters, I'll let you all know. I have talked to the governor, and they give us little hope, but it's all at the table when the three people close the doors. I don't know what they talk, but that's where they make the decisions. So thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. And I don't know, maybe we need to have more sessions, brainstorming and seeing how we can help these women and families. It's not only a woman comes through the door, but it's not the woman, it's the whole family behind her. So we have to think about the family impact. And we have Tuesdays and Thursdays, we bring bread from Wegmans and the food kitchen and keep it on the table now. And it's gone in a few hours because some women say that's the only food they have because they don't know where to find other food. And we are giving them list, and they're shy to go. I mean, they feel like it's not their right to go. It's a lot of complications. It's not easy to go from middle class to the poor. So people didn't have in between. They just fell from there to here. So that's the problem. and psychologically. We are sending them for counseling, some of them, because it's a huge, huge impact for them and the children. So thank you, and I hope you'll get to hear more about these things from other centers, and we can make it work together. I know you all understand and caring, so let's do it together. And Barbara Lifton is amazing. We are very fortunate to have Barbara Lifton as representing us, and she's fighting for our program too. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Dami. Anyone else here to speak?
Good evening. My name is Bob Ritter. I'm with the Cancer Resource Center here in town. I also want to mention how the economic downturn has affected our clients. And some things are really pretty obvious and some things are not. I mean, the obvious ones are that people without insurance will delay seeking care. And that's clear. It happens all the time. And they will also delay seeking screening. They'll delay mammograms and so forth. Those things are fairly straightforward and fairly clear-cut. But there's some things that aren't so obvious. For example, if someone comes to me, they've been diagnosed, they need treatment, they don't have insurance or money, I will say the first step is to stop by DSS to apply for Medicaid. If they call up DSS, the next available appointment might be in 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. As more and more people lose jobs, lose insurance, that waiting period will increase. I think that's going to be a real issue, and it's a real concern. Also, I see many people who almost seem to disappear. They've been diagnosed with cancer. They have some scheduled CAT scan, say, and sometimes they don't show up. And I'm really sure that for many people, it's because of economics. Now, locally, the hospital's very good. The cancer physicians are very good, but a lot of times people wonder. You know, they don't advocate for themselves that well sometimes, and they wonder, if I go, well, I just talked with the bill, $4,000. And I know some people, they aren't quite sure what to do, so they do nothing. So they really delay their care. And certainly for cancer, that's a very significant issue. And I also see more and more people who don't qualify for Medicaid, but just a little bit, who don't have insurance, can't pay for care, and they're in that very, in the, they make between, you know, $8,000 and $12,000, and they're really stuck. And, you know, having cancer is hard enough, and to have cancer without insurance is just unbelievable. And those are the people that we deal with quite often. Did want to pass out our latest version of our resource guide, and much of what we do is direct people to resources. I mean, people are often overwhelmed, and what we do is try to make things just a little bit better.
Thank you, Bob. Anyone else wish to speak under privilege of the floor for the public? If not, we'll move on to privilege of the floor for county legislatures. Jim, Dennis, and Pam.
Thank you, Michael. I just wanted to mention Ed Connolly a little bit. You mentioned him at the beginning. I was fortunate enough to begin my career in local politics in 1974, and I spent 5 years with Ed Connolly when he was the mayor of the city of Ithaca. And he was an interesting character. Irish Catholic, worked in a gas station while he was the mayor. We were paying $12,000 a year then to be the mayor. He sold cars at Zacacus Chevrolet at the same time so he could make ends meet in his own family. And his wife worked for the school district as a cook at Boynton Junior High in those days. And Ed campaigned long and hard for raising the salary of the mayor, and city council at the time ran it all the way up to $18,000. So it was a significant raise, and he was able to be a so-called full-time mayor. But the reason I mentioned him was that for a person who was not formally educated past high school, he was able, when he came in as mayor, he was able to get good people to share their knowledge and their and their vision to help make decisions for the city of Ithaca that benefited them. He was the mayor after urban renewal had practically devastated downtown in the 60s, and he kind of came in with a philosophy that the city of Ithaca should be the core business section of the county. And he would say he was opposed to urban malls and that sort of thing. And those of us on the city council in those days were actually responsible for Bolton Point being formed because we shut off the water to the town of Lansing that was running water up on Trip Hammer Road. And they got angry, formed the village of Lansing, and built their own water plant. So, Ed took credit for that in a positive way. And some of the people he brought to the front in local government, Stu Stein, who came over here, Henry Doney, Stu Lewis was a merchant downtown in the Commons for many years. He was a large part of the discussion. Barbara Blanchard, who you all know, Tom Niederkorn, Tay Fancourt, Tom Horde, other people, John Gutenberger, a woman named Ann Jones, who I was on the city council with, and I think we have an award that we give out, or Human Service Coalition does, and Ethel Nichols, Ray Bordoni, and these were all people. Ethel was Ben's wife, and Nancy Meyer was a city council person. And then following, after Ed left, Ray Schlatter, Dave Banfield, many people came to the city government that had a real impact. But he was he had an especially good vision, I think, for a local guy, and was able to pull all that together and pretty much made Ithaca what it was and continues to be.
Thank you very much, Jim. Pam Magazine?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to thank the people who came and spoke about what's going on out there. We see it on television, we hear it on the radio, we see it in our scary material we're getting out of Albany in terms of what's happening. But you folks put a face to it, and you deal with people who are struggling every day. And I, for one, very much appreciate the work that you do, and I appreciate you coming here and reminding us of the work that you do. Moving on to another topic, I would like to point out to everybody that on your desk you will find the 2009 Transit Development Plan. These are the route changes that TCAT hired a consultant. They spent a lot of time looking at the routes, counting people, the numbers of people getting on and off the buses, pulling in information. And this is a list of changes that they put together. And they've had, I think there were 6 meetings this week. Over 250 people attended those meetings. There were lots of suggestions. There were clearly some changes that people felt fairly strongly about. And so what has happened is that now all of this information will be brought back to TCAT, and they will look at it all again. And for those of you at home who have not had an opportunity to have any kind of input on this, you can email TCAT at tcat@tcatmail.com or write to TCAT at 737 Willow Avenue. Or you can call them at 277-9388, extension 222. If you've looked at the plan and have concerns about it, if you have a website, you can look at their website and look at the plan. It's www.tcatbus.com. And the development plan is there. And I urge all of you, my fellow legislators, to look at this route, these route changes, and to talk to their constituents, because clearly this is the first time that the TCAT is making any major revisions to its routing system in 10 years. And so sometimes it's hard because it is change. And sometimes things will be okay, but they're just going to be done in a little bit different way. But TCAD is certainly interested in hearing from people, and I encourage folks to respond to them.
Thanks, Pam. Martha Roberts.
I also want to thank the folks who came to speak. I think it's always really important for us to hear directly from people who we serve, but especially in this time, it's really important that we hear from the agencies and from clients as well. On this package, I was was pointed out to me that there is a typo, and the East Hill routes, the second to last page, it says a restructured Route 42 will continue to serve Varna. I believe that's 43. So
yes, I think they noticed that, but thank you.
Okay, just because I know folks in my district are very well educated on Routes 43 and 54 and all that, and we're also very pleased that TCAD is offering to schedule a meeting in Varna for to be scheduled. They're working on that, so I'm really pleased that TCAD's interested in hearing directly from folks and making that even more possible. An article in the paper from Thursday, February 12th, caught my eye about one of the title, Gas and Water Case Scrutinized in Pennsylvania. Just in case we want to know what's happening with Marcellus Shale drilling in the state to our south, where they have started this drilling well ahead of what's going on in New York. They've had a water well explode on January 1st. Tests have traced the gas causing the problem to the Devonian Formation, which includes the Marcellus Shale, and it's being they're pretty sure that this is gas that came up through the pipes from the Marcellus drilling, and they're intensively testing about 9 wells right around this particular explosion, with homes that are now not able to use their water, and they're pretty sure that there's a problem that is going to maybe take years to fix. So I hope that the end of this story mentions that the DEC in New York is watching this carefully. I certainly hope that's true. So.
Thank you, Martha. Frank Proto.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Give you a couple of the inevitable consumer alerts. In case you missed it, I'm always picking on NYSEG. It won't be NYSEG tonight, Jim. It'll be Time Warner. Stay tuned. If you missed the legal notices in the Ithaca Journal, you may want to go back to Friday's paper and review them. Time Warner has a whole laundry list of contracts that are expiring, and unfortunately they did not list the dates that they're expiring, but they're required in their legal notification to tell you which stations they may not be renewing contracts with. And there is a two-column list there that you may want to spend some time, or tell your constituents to spend some time reviewing. A lot of them are transfers to high-definition TV. But I'm thinking of what Dami said. A lot of the folks that are in the category that you were describing often can't afford a movie, and often can't get out and do the types of things that some others can, and they're relying on their TVs for entertainment, and that covers a whole band of people. If Time Warner, and I don't want to scare anyone, but unless you stay alert, unless you tell your constituents to stay alert to what Time Warner is proposing, there may be a change that no one anticipates. This has nothing to do with the change that was supposed to take place February 17th today. It has absolutely nothing to do with that. That has been postponed, as you know. The other item that I wanted to mention under consumer alert, and this is one that I can't understand why people haven't gotten a little more annoyed about. In case you've missed it, the price of a barrel of oil is under $40 now. Today it was hovering around $34, $35. The concern there is that the price of gas at the pump has gone up. And the perception is that it's going to get tweaked upward until the public starts screaming again. And it's quite ironic that we're heading, I know this sounds crazy, this is February, and we're looking at still some bad weather. But the warm weather probably will come by August, Pam, do you think? At any rate, people will be traveling, even if you're going back and forth to work or wherever. I would urge anyone who's concerned about the price of gas to start making more noise about the price of gasoline, because that price is going to start creeping over $3 a gallon. And I won't say it'll be too late, but unfortunately, it's something that you must stay on top of. And the public was responsible for driving the price down. Remember, we stopped driving, and TCAT was the fortunate recipient of 3 million riders last year. Part of it was due to the price of gas. I want to say something, just one more item, on what Representative Robertson brought up about the gas drilling and the water in Pennsylvania. Earlier today, I had a conversation with Macrovac. It's the old Buck Labs over in Cortland. I'm urging all of my constituents in Danby, Caroline, and the part of the town of Ithaca that I represent, I'm urging everyone to get a baseline water test if they're using well water or if they're using water that's drawn from an aquifer. There hasn't been any drilling in this county, in this round at any rate, except for one well in Lansing. And my understanding is that they're no longer drilling there. If you at least get a baseline water test, and they are not cheap, I don't want to mislead anyone. Hopefully that's one of the issues that we can take up on the health committee. At least you'll have something that you can go back to prior to any of the drilling that potentially will take place here. They're getting ready to drill in Broome County. I think you probably saw the same article I did regarding Tom Libous's, Senator Libous's concern about Broome County. So I would urge you very much, contact the health department. They can put you in touch with any one of the testing labs. But the big one is, Cornell does some testing. They'll analyze a test for you. But the one in Cortland is the one most of us use, and they're very, very good. The second piece is that the DEC is looking at the regs, and they will. The game plan now is to have something under review and perhaps in place by the middle to the end of the summer. At least that's what some of us have been told through the Water Resources Council, because we have been following that rather closely. Pertaining to the drilling. I'll try to keep you posted on that too as we get more information, because it's very timely. I think John Anderson told us at one point that it's between 50% and 60% of the residents in this county get their water from wells, and that means that there could be potential for that many. Of course, it depends on where the oil companies are thinking of drilling. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Frank. Mark had a quick point, then Dooley.
Yeah, I should have mentioned while Dami and others were here, there, I believe that the there is an alternative to the state budget cuts that have been, seems that all that's being talked about in Albany, and that's Senate Bill 2021, which is sponsored by Senator Eric Schneiderman, which would add three new tax brackets for taxpayers of $250,000 and up. and restore a little bit of tax equity to our structure, our tax structure. And I'm preparing a resolution that Jim has agreed to bring to the public safety, to the budget committee. A budget committee meeting next week that I hope that committee will endorse and then bring to the full legislature. It would raise about $6 billion and take care of approximately half or nearly half of the shortfall that is projected for the state budget for next year. And I think when the governor says that we need to share the pain, I think he's right. And I think that includes people who make more than $250,000 a year. And the increases that are discussed are that are proposed are relatively small and but very, very important. So I hope that this body will endorse that when it comes up. And Senator Barbara Lipton's office told me today that she is planning to sign on as a co-sponsor in the assembly. So.
Thank you, Martha. Julie, then Nathan.
Thanks, Frank. Frank, I think the idea of getting baseline well water tests is sensible, except that you don't know what to ask to be tested for because you can't be sure what might be in any fracking fluid. So it's tricky, and I don't know if the state or perhaps Pennsylvania would have some information on what chemicals to test for, but it might be worth following up that way. I had a couple of things I wanted to mention. Time Warner's Public Access Channel 13 will be carrying a program called Turning the Stimulus Green. It's on Against Us tonight at 7. It's on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And Wednesday it's 1 to 1:30 p.m. Thursday it's 11 to 11:30. And the same, and Friday, 11:30 to 12 on Channel 13. This program is a tape of Dominic Frangillo from Caroline Town Board, economist Oesterreich, and political scientist Joseph Schwartz talking about how the jobs the stimulus produces should be aimed at building energy-efficient infrastructure we need. I'm going to quote from this. Public transportation, for instance, but we need to make sure that it's not just white men who get the jobs. And the audience for this taping also provides insights. And it was recorded February 1st. So it's very recent and very relevant. The other thing I wanted to talk about is how things are going on the Vet College campus with the incinerator replacement project. You may remember that 10 or 12 years ago, a community group started in Forest Home by Ruth Maher, pretty much, was very worried about Cornell's plan to replace its incinerator with a bigger and better one. Incinerators have many problems, especially the emissions. And a community group worked with Cornell's Vet College to come up with a much better alternative, alkaline hydrolysis at high temperature and pressure. And Cornell agreed that that was the right way to go, but the State University Construction Fund had other projects which were of a more emergency nature on the Cornell campus, such as the Martha Vann buildings falling down. So this project has been delayed and delayed. It's under construction now, and those of us who are on that committee have gotten photos monthly showing us the progress. It's very encouraging. Then budget problems came along, and the state government, the governor, put a freeze on change orders. And anyone who knows anything about large construction projects knows there are always change orders, and they're very important, and they're generally very well justified. But that put this project back on hold for a little while. It had gotten ahead of schedule. So now we're back at the originally projected schedule, and we're hoping that it will open for business on July 1st of this year. Prior to that, while we're waiting, Cornell is waiting for DEC to review the findings of tests, there will probably be an open house. And I'll let you know about that when it happens. It's been a long time coming, And we also learned of a recent study that was just done at the University of Wisconsin looking at the fate of prions in sewage systems, which is definitely relevant because one of Cornell's options is to have the hydrolysate from this process go to the Ithaca Area Wastewater Treatment Plant. And this Wisconsin study demonstrated what we all had thought theoretically would be the case, that prions, which are proteins, organic materials, would not be become part of the liquid effluent, but would become part of the solid sludge. And so even without alkaline hydrolysis treatment, prions would not go into the lake. With the alkaline hydrolysis treatment, our sludge might be safe, and that's the other part of it. But for people who've been really worried about the lake and whether our sewer treatment plant should handle this hydrolysate, I think it's been well demonstrated now that it's safe.
Thank you. Thank you for a dozen or more years of service on that committee. Frank had a quick rejoinder, then on to Nathan.
Dooley, thanks for reminding me about the hydrofracking. I did ask that question of the lab, and they said that what they're using as a regimen for the various mineral, you know, what they're testing for, is what they have been using in Pennsylvania, where the drilling has been taking place.
Great.
It's unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, once the DEC completes that review this summer, there probably will be additional items added, I would suspect, but at least we're off, according to the lab, they're able to do as much as they're aware of now. But they're not cheap. It's not a cheap analysis.
Thank you, Frank. And Nathan?
Thanks, Mike.
I went to NYSAC last week with Will and Mike and Mike Fuselier, and Martha, Carol, I already said Joe, and Norma. Well, was that everyone? Yeah, and it was a really great event. I went to a couple workshops, and I just wanted to talk about them very briefly. I went to one on the pension system, and then, you know, the reform of the pension system, you know, increasing the age to 62, and basically bringing the pension system more in line with what other types of benefits that people are getting out in the general economy. And I thought those were really good changes, and I'm glad that that NYSAC passed a resolution actually endorsing it. It's one of the governor's proposals.
Let's just say NYSAC stands for?
NYSAC stands for the New York State Association of Counties. And also, I went to a Marcellus Shale workshop, which was really interesting because and it was from the Broome County attorney. He was the guy that was giving the presentation, and he talked about so what he did is he went to Texas and actually worked with, followed around this company and talked to these different communities. Who basically started doing natural gas drilling, and they ran into all sorts of mechanical problems, and the key was that there weren't like geological problems so much as there were equipment problems, construction problems that could easily have been mitigated, right? That, you know, if there was more oversight and regulation. So that was his point, and he was talking about that a great deal. It was a very balanced kind of discussion, but there was something. Some of the discussion was really interesting. Like, for example, the seismic testers that they use. I mean, this is really crazy stuff. I mean, basically, they're these giant trucks, and they've already been going through Chemung and Broome County. Right, and they go on county roads, you know, and they basically put seismic pulses like sonar through the ground, right? And then basically, whatever reflects like sonar, you know, they can tell where there may be gas formations. But this was a really interesting thing because it's been already causing problems in these different communities with wells breaking and whatnot. So it's something for us to definitely be aware of, you know. So if you see a giant truck pulsing seismic shock waves into the ground, you should probably call somebody. You know? But the best part of NYSAC, though, is really just hearing from the state leaders. You know, hearing from Dean Skelos and from Senator Malcolm Smith, Senator Skelos, Senator Malcolm Smith, Assembly the Speaker Sheldon Silver, and the governor. And all of them have things to say about the economy. And I was frankly very disappointed with what the Senate majority was talking about, how they don't want to look at taxes or put taxes on the table, even increasing taxes on the wealthy. I did like what the Assembly Speaker said, and later on, the day later, the Assembly Speaker actually talked about how, as a temporary measure for 2 years, that he wanted to increase taxes on the wealthy. But what I want to, I'm a little bit frazzled right now. Today, the governor did a really interesting kind of press conference about the deficit and in the budget, and specifically as it relates to stimulus, because he was saying that he realizes now that with stimulus passing, a lot of people are going to go, "Phew, all right, we're good. Like, you know, this year is done with. We're going to get this stimulus money. We're going to get through this. Now it's just going to be a hiccup. It's not going to be a big major crisis." But what the governor said is you have to remember that this crisis can continue, and we're not going to have probably a stimulus package next year and the year after that, every single year for $1 trillion each time. Right? So this is a one shot. That will help us. But the thing is that our deficit is something that is long term and will be there for a while. So you have two real options. You can make cuts, or you can actually increase revenues, right? And I think that with what Dami and other people were saying, you know, really there comes a point when the state needs to decide whether or not they want to actually fight, whether they want to fix this deficit by bringing parity to the tax system and increasing taxes on the wealthy and actually having a progressive system like California and New Jersey and other places that are big states like us, you know, with similar types of economies, or if we're going to balance it with more cuts on the backs of the poor and middle class. I mean, really, I think that's the choice: taxes on rich, on the wealthy, or cuts on programs for the poor and the middle class. And frankly, you know, I think we should choose taxes on the wealthy. And so I'm glad that Senator Schneiderman is pushing that, and I'm really proud of our Assemblywoman also for signing on as a co-sponsor. So with that, I'm sorry I got a little into it, but that's my comment.
Other comments? I have Mike Sigler and Frank again. Let's try to keep our comments short.
Well, I wasn't going to comment, but since everybody's on this raise taxes bandwagon, I just want to point out that California's bankrupt and they're laying off 10,000 people out of the day. So to cite a high tax state that's doing really well, we're not the best choice.
Yeah, well,
New Jersey, they're actually not going to fund their pensions this year so that they can rob their pensions so that they can pay their bills. Again, raising taxes in those two high tax states, probably not the best idea. I don't see it as a choice between raising taxes on the wealthy and cutting to the poor. Even if you follow Martha, which I think is an overseas idea, I'm very curious. I've asked my counter to ask this at the meeting on Mondays. I'm curious as to what income numbers from what year you're basing this $6 billion projection on. Because if you're basing it on 2008, you might get there. If you're basing it on 2009, I don't see how you're going to get there. Even with $6 billion, you're looking at a $12 billion shortfall in New York State. And that's not even counting our pensions, which we're not going to, what, it was 70%? We're better than most states. That's the good news. So I really don't see this as a choice between cuts or raising taxes. You live in one of the highest tax states in the nation. To say, yes, we need to increase more taxes, at some point people break. I think we're already there. So you might have a mix of some sort. If you can get the middle class a tax cut, that would be fantastic. I don't know what people think middle class is in this state, but it's certainly a lower number downstate than it is upstate. It upsets me that the only thing coming out of the Assembly is we're going to raise taxes.
That's not the
problem. I sat down with number of people from the Assembly. They don't seem, anybody seems willing to make some sacrifices here. So we'll see what they do, but $6 billion doesn't get us there. So.
Thank you, Mike. On to Frank quickly, then Carol. I'd like to wrap up.
Yeah. Nathan, let's not discuss the economy right now. We'll be here for the next 4 days because we all have a different opinion. In case you missed it, the stimulus package, the president signed it today. So we'll all be blessed, or your grandchildren will be blessed with paying that back. What I wanted to mention, Nathan, is that those seismic testing trucks are here.
Oh, yeah.
And they have been here. Some of us that were on this board when we did landfills, those same trucks were here. Some of you, Dewey probably remembers the when we were testing for bedrock, we used the same trucks, or they used the same trucks. So they have been here, they will be here, and they probably will continue to be here. Bill Sesney is already aware of it. They posted some roads, as I understand it, because they are a heavy piece of equipment.
Yeah. Thank you, Frank. On to Carol Chuck.
Yeah, I wasn't going to jump into this fray either, but but since you invited us, Mike, I just want to point out that the New York State tax structure has resulted in what has become a decades-long shift of the tax burden on the lower percentages of the population. And I don't have the figures right in front of me, but the ones that stick in my mind most clearly that I did memorize is that the effect of the New York State tax system, that's income, sales, and other taxes combined, come in now at 6.85% on the richest 1% of New Yorkers, and at about 12%, 11 to 12%, on the bottom half of New York State taxpayers. And the chart almost goes up as the income, it goes, you know, the taxes go up as your income goes down, with a little bit of a waiver in the various bands. That is something that has happened over the past two decades or more, and that is the tax shift that people are talking about changing and trying to counteract. I don't think we're looking to get to a place where it would even vaguely be called progressive, where the amount would go up as a percentage as your income went up. It really at this point is let's try to hold the line at all. So I just wanted that to be very clear.
Thank you. I hope we're not going to continue debating how to solve the structural deficit of New York State. Jim,
very short round two. If we are going to debate taxes, I would hope that we're in a visual mode here. Please show up with your visual aids and charts and graphs so that you can refer to them. It'll make it much easier for those 11 viewers who are out there.
Yes. Is there anyone else in the legislature who wish to speak?
I'm going to counteract this every time it comes up because I have 11 people, more than 11 people, almost every week tell me that they have watched.
Does anyone else wish to speak? Kathy Lucerer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today I want to tell you all about an exciting documentary that just premiered. It's about three Mexican-American lawyers who took a civil rights case to the Supreme Court and won. My dad was one of them. The movie will be shown next Monday on PBS, in Ithaca, it's at 9 p.m., WCNY Channel 4, WSKG Channel 6, Monday the 23rd. It's called A Class Apart. It's being shown as part of the American Experience series. You can go to pbs.org, look up American Experience series. It's about three Mexican-American lawyers who took a civil rights case to the Supreme Court and won. Hernandez versus Texas was a foundation case for Brown versus the Board of Education. A Class Apart, a new documentary by I'm reading a blurb, but listen to this. A new documentary by celebrated filmmakers Carlos Sandoval, who did Farmingville, for those of you who know about the Westchester incident where day laborers were beat up, and Peter Miller, who did Sacco and Vanzetti, Passing It On. This film is the first major film to bring to life the heroic struggle of Mexican-Americans against the Jim Crow-style discrimination targeted against them. It's set in post-World War II Texas, and it raised questions about inclusion, American identity, and equality before the law that are as important today as ever. It dramatically interweaves the story of its central characters, activists and lawyers, returning veterans and ordinary citizens, murderer and victim, within the broader history of Latinos in America during a time of extraordinary change. If you go to the website, look up American Experience and click on class, and you'll see this picture with a flag, and my dad is one of the guys on the right. And in the photo montage, there's pictures of my dad. You can look at Carlos Sandoval's site because he's a very talented filmmaker. Just remember Camino Bluff, or you can find it on the PBS site. And Peter Miller's site, my gosh, it links back to the PBS site. I'm going to repeat one more time, 9 p.m. on the 23rd, WCNY Channel 4, WSKG Channel 6. It's part of the American Experience series. I hope you watch it. You know I will.
Thank you, Kathy. I was able to actually print off the page that you referenced. So it'll be over on our boxes if people want to look at it. It does have references to Kathy's father, which you learn a lot about our own legislators even after serving together for 7 or 8 years. One of the quotes toward the last page of the transcript of that documentary, I think, says a lot. America as a whole owes a great debt to the people who pursued this case. So I think it's worth our while to pursue it, and you can look at it at your leisure. If there's no further comments from legislators, we'll move on. I don't believe we have any municipal official for a report, so we'll go to our special topics. We have actually two topics tonight. The second two were combined. I think any comments from Betty are going to be combined into presentation with Kathy Slaughter and Nancy Burston from Human Services Coalition. But first, we'll have Steve Losey speaking about our health benefits consortium. And I think we all got our handouts in advance on this.
Can I just give you a brief introduction?
Sure, why don't you
give Steve and the status of where we are. I think I reported at the last meeting that the effort that was initiated by this county some time ago now, which is really kind of a breakthrough development on the statewide front, which is to pursue the idea of a consortium, a collaboration of municipalities to purchase health benefits together, to lower the cost of health care to our employees. But that is now taking shape. We're at a point now where agreements are being drafted and being forwarded to Albany to the State Insurance Department to make sure that we are compliant with state insurance law. Again, the details of this plan are now beginning to take shape very rapidly, and it's appropriate that we bring this matter to the legislature now to make sure that you're up to speed. We did go to the Government Performance Committee last week to provide a briefing, and we'll go back to Budget Committee next week so that if there are any details that arise out of tonight's discussion, we can pursue those details then. But I do want to emphasize, we've talked about a national economy that's facing troubles and a state economy that's facing troubles. This is an example of a local area that's taken action to try to get costs in line, to save the taxpayers some money and provide good services to our employees. So I'm very pleased to introduce Steve Losey, who's the consultant that was hired by TCOG. Again, this is a collaborative effort working through TCOG. Steve was hired by TCOG to put the pieces of this puzzle together and is here tonight to give a very brief presentation on the status of that project.
Thank you very much, Joe. Again, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Steve Losey. I'm from firm Losey & Cahill, and we work with a lot of municipal consortiums around the state. A lot of them are school district-based. This is actually kind of an exciting thing for us because it's one of the first county-based municipal consortiums that we've been involved with, where you're actually including the two largest employers in the area, the county and the city, and all the smaller employers, the towns and villages, into one consortium. We did put together just a brief two-page handout that I believe is in your packet. I just want to touch on a couple of the key principles behind why it makes sense for this consortium to form, and what types of information you're going to be looking at in the future as you get ready to make a decision to move this thing forward on January 1st of 2010. Really, when we look at why to join a consortium, it really comes down to four major principles, if you will. Cost savings, obviously, it doesn't make any sense to put this all together and have everybody join together to provide health insurance if it's not going to end up with cost savings. Now, the cost savings is going to vary from entity to entity. Certainly, the smaller employers are going to benefit much greater from participation in the consortium than larger employers. But we do believe that the county, the city, and all the municipalities in this region will benefit from this as a result of being a much larger buying pool, getting some economies of scale, reducing administrative expenses, also using some of the principles of insurance. By joining together in a larger group, you're going to be able to spread risk over that population. And that's going to lend to the next two principles, which is stability and protection. You're going to be protected from being part of a larger group. So an individual large loss is an example that may have had an impact on the county. Now that you're going to be almost twice as big as the county enrollment, that loss will be spread over that population and will help protect you and shield you in terms of your cash flow and your finances. In terms of stability, what we're trying to get at, with again, with this larger population, is really the same principles that insurance companies use, which is to stabilize the increases over time so you don't get those wild fluctuations from year to year in your budget. So one year you get a 3 or a 4% increase, and the next year you're dealing with 20. What we'd like to see is if we get to a baseline where it's the most efficient program that we can provide, and then from that point forward it's manageable, steady, reliable increases. As you look over a long-term period, it'll provide you with a lot of stability and cost savings. The last item is control. The one thing that the county does benefit from that a lot of the small municipalities can't is a little bit of control over your own program. You're able to do some things from a financial perspective that smaller entities can't do. As a consortium, you'll maintain control over the program, and even greater than the county currently does. Because of the fact that the board of directors is not only going to be managing the program from a day-to-day basis, but they're going to be analyzing budgets, setting rates, developing the different plan designs, helping to coordinate all of this different activity for all the employers. So again, as a larger group, you're going to have a lot of resources to fall back on, and that control, again, will lead to some of the other items, especially cost savings. By controlling what's happening with the budgets, you'll be able to plan a lot better in dealing with your own local budget, and that should help you into the future as we deal with these tough economic times. In terms of the goal of the consortium, it's really kind of simple. Basically, the consortium is coming together to provide health insurance in a more cost-effective manner than each municipality could do on their own out in the marketplace. You know, it's kind of a simple statement, but pretty powerful. Really, what we're looking to do is just to do business a little bit differently, and again, to try to lower the costs for everybody, all the taxpayers throughout the county. In terms of the makeup of the consortium, currently, it's limited to the county, the city, and all the towns and villages that lie within the County of Tompkins' geographical and political boundaries. There is provisions in the agreement which would allow for municipalities outside of this territory, if you will, or the county, to join the consortium, but there's a certain threshold that they would have to meet in terms of approval by the Board of Directors. And the one caveat I would put on that is that you want any municipality that would join your consortium to be of like risk. Similar demographics, similar benefit plans, purchasing their medical care in a similar region. Health insurance and medical care today is very regionally delivered. The cost structures are very different from region to region. What you folks pay here in Ithaca for services is quite a bit different than they pay in New York City or in Albany or in Buffalo. So we want to make sure to maintain basically partners in the consortium that are of like risk, of like exposure. So that's one caveat that we would put on it. In terms of how this consortium is going to be structured and operated, there is an operating agreement. I believe that you folks have gotten at least the most recent draft of that delivered to you. It is also available on the county's website under the shared services link. It's right on the main page.
If people have not seen it, it's on the desk out there where the newspapers are kept.
Oh, thank you. The operating agreement for this municipal consortium is going to work very much like bylaws of a corporation. It really sets out all the duties and responsibilities of those who will serve the board and run the program. It lays out all the liabilities, responsibilities, and duties of each municipality that's going to be a partner in this municipal consortium. And if you read through it, it really does give you a good understanding of how the consortium is going to be set up and operate. In terms of benefit models, one of the things that we're assuring all the municipalities that are joining the program and really assuring all the employees and retirees of the program, is that the benefit models that we're establishing through the consortium are going to provide benefits that are at least equal to, if not better than, what everybody is currently providing on their own. So we're going through and establishing programs to match, you know, the county's indemnity plan or the county's PPO plan. We don't want any person having their benefits diminished as a result of this. We're going to get the cost savings by still providing the same level of benefits. And again, the way we're going to get to those cost savings is not by putting it on the backs of the members, but by lowering our administrative costs, running a more efficient program, pooling our reserves, earning interest income, doing all the things that we need to do to maximize every dollar that's put into the program. In terms of the financial model that we're currently looking at to operate the program, we're currently looking at self-insurance as the vehicle. It's going to be under what they refer to as Article 47 of the insurance law. It's a law that regulates self-insured municipal consortiums in New York State. The reason we're looking at this particular funding mechanism at this point in time really has to do with the laws and the structure of the laws in New York State. In order to allow the small employers, those employers of less than 50, into the consortium, we have to be self-insured. If we provide a fully insured package, it has to be community rated, and quite frankly, that's not cost advantageous to the county, the city, or any of the employers. So right now we're moving forward under Article 47 of the insurance law. It will be a self-insured program, but you will have the assurance, and the employees and retirees also have the assurance, that the New York State Insurance Department is overseeing the program. They have the regulatory authority over the program. We have to submit all of our agreements, all of our documents to them for approval. But we also have to provide them with financial information, which they will be reviewing on a regular basis to initially provide the certificate of authority to run the program and then to continue that certificate of authority as the program moves down the road. In terms of what we're asking you folks to do, and we've done a number of these presentations at all the various towns and villages, and we haven't gotten to them all yet, but we're trying to get to them all. We're basically asking you just to get familiar with what the consortium is, get familiar with the agreement, have some basic understanding of the principles. We will continue to come back to you. I believe Joe mentioned that we're going to be at the Budget Committee meeting on Thursday, I believe it is. On Monday. Okay. We're going to be at TCOG on Thursday. I'm spending a lot of time in Ithaca. What's that? And we have a meeting tomorrow as well. But we're going to be at the Budget Committee. So as you have questions or as you start to think of things or as you're reviewing different documents, you know, bring those questions up. We're developing frequently asked questions with answers that we're going to be putting on the website that, again, provide more and more information. In terms of the benefit plans and the cost of those benefit plans, our target is to get those out to you sometime late March, early April at the latest. What we're asking you to do is consider, obviously, becoming a partner in the program. And we would like to have agreements considered and passed sometime before July, May, June, July of 2009, with an anticipated start date of January 1st, 2010. Between those dates of July and, say, sometime in November, we're going to still be getting out to you with a lot of information, answering questions of employees and retirees about the benefits that they're going to be receiving, have an open enrollment sometime in November, and again, kick the program off on January 1st of 2010. So I tried to do that kind of Reader's Digest version kind of quickly for you. I certainly would be willing to take any questions that you may have at this point in time.
Before I call on Nathan, do you want to disintroduce Dave the Sanders, the project manager?
Dave,
you
Dave Sanders, I was recently hired as program manager.
Just use the mic, Dave.
Don't have a loud voice. Again, my name is Dave Sanders. I was recently hired last week as program manager to assist Steve. Obviously, as he's asking those questions, I'll take them down for you. We'll get them back to me as soon as we possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And questions, Nathan?
I just wanted to say that Steve has been, and Losi and Cahill, the firm that Steve's a part of, has been doing an excellent job so far with this program. I mean, every one of our meetings have been very straightforward, very at a great pace, and incredibly clear. And when we don't have interns in the room, I'm the guy that takes the notes. And you know, it's always easy to do so because everything's laid out so clearly. And really, these guys, Losi and Cahill, they're pros at this kind of stuff. And I think it's clear. And I think the end product is going to be really amazing and a great deal for all of us at Tompkins County. And we'll will really insulate us from the whims of the insurance industry, which are hurting right now because they rely so heavily on investment revenue that they'll need to make up their profits somewhere else, and they're going to do that by increasing premiums. If we can insulate ourselves from that by doing this, that's going to be huge for us, and it's going to really benefit the taxpayers.
Thanks, Nathan. Martha?
Yeah, Nathan is talking about this because he's on the steering committee that's been working through this sort of on behalf of TCOG, really working with Steve, and Joe's been on that, and Jonathan, John, right, Jonathan, you're on the steering committee?
I think so.
All right, you could have taken
my attendance is really
okay. Well, as you probably will remember, Steve Witcher kind of really kicked this off. If I'm forgetting anybody here who's on the steering committee, I'm sorry. But
Jackie Kipler has been very involved in supporting the project as well.
It might be helpful if you could send around a list of the steering committee members because it includes other members of TCOG. I think all of us would be interested in that. I have a question, Steve, about in your two-page piece here, in terms of cost savings, the benefits come to us in part from elimination of insurance company profits. So exactly how do we do that?
Well, basically under a self-insured model,
right.
What's going to happen in terms of the consortium is there's going to be a premium equivalent rate developed for the program, for each benefit level associated with the program. Those premium equivalent rates are going to be paid into the consortium. The only monies that are going to be expensed out of the consortium are going to be those monies necessary for administrative overhead. We have to hire someone to operate the program and run the program for us, and for claims, for actual benefit payments. So we're not going to be paying a premium to an insurance company. So as a result, every dollar that's going to be expensed by the program is going to be felt within the premium. Any excess funds that may exist will be set aside in reserves, will earn interest income, and that will stay in the program. Typically under your traditional insurance model, a premium is paid to the insurance company. They take a portion for administrative overhead. They take the reserves and set them aside. They earn the interest income off those reserves. A lot of times they will build in on their trend factors some margin. So maybe if the paid claims are projected to go up 8%, they may build in a trend, you know, 10% to make sure that they're not going to lose money on those premium equivalent rates. And as a result, there is opportunities for the insurance company to make money off of the program. What we're going to do is we're going to take the insurance company or the third-party administrator's role down to its basic level. We're basically going to hire them as a service provider, give us a fee for how much you want to charge for that, and that's what we're going to pay you. With most of the consortiums that we operate or that we work with around the state, the administrative portion of the budget is only about 5% of the total expenses. The other 95 cents on the dollar is directly related to claims. If you look at a traditional insurance model, those can range anywhere from 8 to 15 and even higher than 15%. So that's really where we're going to eliminate the profit, make the program as efficient as possible. And then once we do that, whatever the paid claims growth is going to be from year to year, that's what we can anticipate happening with our premiums, unless we do other types of things. You know, we find better benefit plans that might be out there. We do a little better job of negotiating reimbursement rates for the hospitals and the physicians through the insurance company or third-party administrator, whatever the case may be. But that's basically how we're going to try to get to that elimination of profits and making the program more efficient.
Okay, thank you.
I have several people with hands. I just want to mention that we are heading eventually, in a couple of months, towards approving this municipal cooperation agreement. So that's the point of this presentation and point of educating ourselves through committees and all that. Mike Sigler, Jim Dennis, and Will.
Well, I had one question, but now I have two. Doesn't that just mean that we're taking on the risk that an insurance company would? I mean, we're not really eliminating the profit of the insurance company. We're just taking on the risk that they would have taken.
You're doing both, yes.
Okay. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but so if we had one year that had a lot of claims, we could expect our premiums to go up commensurate with whatever the...
Yeah, the premiums are going to be a function of your expenses, and the predominant level of expenses is going to be paid claims, which is benefit-driven. By having a larger pool, by inviting the city in, you have the county, you've got all the towns and villages, now you've doubled your size.
Right.
So you're better equipped to take on that risk. And through prudent planning and having the proper reserves set aside, you can protect yourself from a cash flow perspective if you do exceed expected claims in a given year by 5% more than you expect. You can eat into those reserves a little bit, soften the blow, look to recoup those over time. In the insurance industry, they don't give you the time to recoup them over multiple years.
Right.
If they get a loss this year, they're looking to recoup it next year.
Right.
That's when you see your premiums go, you know, up by 15 or 20 or 25%. By having the control over the budget, you're able to plan for that a little bit better and spread it out over a longer period of time.
Okay. My other question is, we have certain agencies. Have we, this may be too early for this question, or you already maybe answered it. We have certain agencies that are not county employees per se, like the library would be probably the best example. Are we, have we set up guidelines as to who's a municipal employee and who is not?
Well, right now the consortium agreement's limited to municipal corporations. I received a phone call 2 days ago from TCAT asking if they could be considered to join the consortium. I don't know the answer to that. We passed it along to the attorneys that work with the program through TCAT. And they're investigating whether or not an authority, if you will, like TCAT or a library or other types of, you know, quasi-municipal entities would be able to join the consortium. I don't know the answer to that today.
Okay.
They would have to qualify under Article 5G as a municipal corporation, as we understand it right now.
I have Jim, then Will, then Bruce.
Steve, I believe the library employees are under our health benefit plan now.
Okay.
And TC3 is also, I believe. My question is, and I'm sure it's answered sort of in paragraph 3 and not in page 2. If you have, for example, the city of Ithaca, who have a bargaining agreement with the police department, and they have one set of benefits for their health, and we have a different one over here, how does that all mix in? And I think I know the answer, but I think it's an answer that's going to have to get answered in public session from bargaining units and before bargaining.
Basically, in terms of the development of premiums, if you will, you know, how much you're going to pay into the program, we're going to take into consideration the expenses of the group as a whole and develop a baseline rate from that. And then what we're going to do is we're going to look at the different benefit plans. So if you have, just to keep things simple, if you've got a prescription drug copay of $5 and someone else has a prescription drug copay of $10, obviously you wouldn't expect to pay the same level of premium for that coverage because the risk associated with those is different. We will have premium differentials associated with each of those plans. So you'll be paying a rate that's commensurate with the benefit package that you belong to. So if you've got the Cadillac of benefit plans, you know, an indemnity plan, very little out-of-pocket expense, your rate may be up here. And someone that has a point of service or a PPO plan, a little bit more cost-sharing, a little bit more managed care, your expenses may be a little bit below that. But it will be weighted so that the benefit plans will take into consideration the benefit differences, but we're not going to charge them based on their actual usage. The charge is going to be based on the group's usage as a whole. Because what we don't want to get into is if there's an unfortunate situation in one of the plans, and you've only got a couple hundred people participating in that, well, if you did it solely based on claims, their rate would go significantly higher. We want to spread that risk over the larger group, but take into consideration the risk associated with the benefit differences, and then rate it that way.
Thank you. Will?
Steve, thank you very much for a very informative presentation, and thanks to all the people that have been working on this. I am relatively new to the thing, and I apologize if my question is as obvious to everybody else. What happens in the if you have a self-insured system, mm-hmm. and you have a catastrophic event that early on, before the system has been able to capitalize and develop a pool, do we have some kind of insurance protection?
There's certain protections you can build into the program. It's commonly referred to as stop-loss insurance. There's two types. There's aggregate, which protects the group as a whole, and specific, which protects the group from individual large losses. Specific stop-loss you can think of is almost like a high-deductible health plan. It sets a deductible at $150,000 or $200,000. And basically what happens is any claims that exceed that level will be reimbursed to the plan by the stop-loss carrier, helps protect the cash flow of the program. So it's an insurance that you buy to kind of oversee the program and make sure that you don't run into a situation where you have a $500,000 loss in a given month and all of a sudden it really cripples our cash flow. This would help stabilize that over time, and certainly is something we're looking at in terms of the inner workings of the program.
And what will we have as participating government entities need to be putting in initially to capitalize the effort?
Basically, the way the program is going to work, there's going to be a premium equivalent rate established.
Yeah.
You're going to get a bill prior to January 1st of 2010, just like you currently do from your insurance carrier, and you're going to pay that premium into the program. Because of the fact that there's a natural lag built in, you know, in terms of claims being incurred and then finally getting through the system and being billed back to the consortium, there's going to be a time period, and take January as an example, where we're going to have very few claims paid out. We'll pay out our little bit of administrative expenses that we'll have, but the lion's share of the premium that's collected will be used to establish our reserve pools and to provide the cash flow that we'll need to operate the program into the future. You get to February, the claims start to escalate a little bit, still not up to what we would consider a mature level. And again, any excess premium that's associated with that is carved off, put into the reserve funds. Those reserve funds are working and earning interest. And that's really what's going to feed the program in terms of providing the cash flow and the reserves to cover the liability in the start.
Thank you. Dooley, then Carol, then Frank.
I heard Mr. Losey describing how there are cost savings because you're not helping insurance companies make the profits they need for their shareholders. And I couldn't help but want to say that that's what makes single-payer national health care on the federal level make so much sense.
Thanks for taking that opportunity. And and Carol.
And a lot of other people, too.
I want to thank you also for this, and I did attend one of the longer sessions. Excuse me. And they've all been quite informative. I think it is due to the absence of a national system that I do think that it's a great idea that we move ahead with this in the interim. I had a question that I didn't get to ask at that other session that I'd like to be able to ask and that you mentioned again tonight. I assume when you talk about working to ensure that there's no diminishment in benefit to covered members, that we're not that we're talking overall within each plan, that we're not necessarily that we shouldn't necessarily assure our employees that as they go through every single item on their list of covered benefits that each and from each of the municipalities that you want to take that each of those items won't necessarily stay at or above.
Yes, we are trying to meet that. Yes, as a goal, quite frankly, we are trying to meet each and every line item that it's equal to or better than what they currently have.
So that each municipality has to come up to the level of each.
Well, there will be different plans. There will be different plans developed, and there will be benefit differences available to those entities. The one thing the consortium wants to do is provide enough benefit plans to provide the flexibility that all the employers need to provide whatever health benefits they have guaranteed to their members. The other thing that we don't want to do is we don't want to get in the way of the collective bargaining process. So if you've got things that you guarantee that the county, that the town of Enfield hasn't guaranteed, those requirements, whatever they are in your collective bargaining agreements, are really your purview as the legislative body for the county. The consortium is not going to get in the way of that. We're just going to provide the vehicle for you to provide the benefits that you've guaranteed. And we're going to try to do that more efficiently than you could do on your own. But we are going to try initially, and I think we're 95% of the way there, that for every line item, we're going to have to provide a benefit that's equal to or better than what they currently have.
That's a high bar.
It is a very high bar. But I will guarantee you that those that are represented by collective bargaining groups will push us to meet that expectation.
And Frank Cota.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve, first, TCAT is a 501c3. It's not an authority, although some of us wish it were. I'm the vice chairman for TCAT. A couple of questions. You mentioned one of the savings would come from concentrating the administrative piece. We have approximately 750 county employees. Assuming all of them were on the current plan, or one in one manner, shape, or form. We also have some people over in personnel that administer or are first line of contact for a lot of employees if there's a question. The administrator that you were describing could be in addition to us maintaining or continuing to maintain our own contact people, couldn't it?
No question.
Because I can't imagine that person wanting to take on a group of, you know. Anyway, you answered that question. The retirees. How I notice in here that there's a separate piece or an additional piece regarding retirees. This is probably not the forum to discuss that. As we get into the plan a little bit more, will you go into the retirees?
No question. We're anticipating, I mentioned, you know, meeting with our legislative bodies and meeting with the employees. I failed to mention we are also setting up meetings with retiree groups. We've already had one meeting with them sometime last year. We went out and met with a rather large group of retirees over at the one of the hotels downtown. And it was well attended, and they had a lot of good questions. We're certainly looking to get communication out to them, and they're certainly a big part of our plan going forward in terms of making sure that not only are we matching the active employees' benefits, but we're meeting that same threshold for the retirees.
Yeah, none of them are shrinking violets.
No, we understand.
Last one is, Mike, you mentioned that there's copies of this out on top of the mailboxes.
It's actually near the newspapers on that table.
Okay. Thank you. As far as meetings that you're going to be having, will you be, or will someone be alerting us to any of the additional meetings as this moves forward?
Why don't we email you the schedule? Because I think there is a schedule.
We're going to get it posted on the website, but yeah, we'll get it out there.
How are you going to communicate that?
I'll drop in the mailbox.
Carrier pigeon. I just want to mention that about 12 years ago, right when I was coming out of the legislature, energy was being deregulated, utilities being deregulated. We started something called MEGA, Municipal Energy and Gas Alliance, which has now become a model across New York State. And I think this is the same kind of thing, that we're on the frontier of trying to be a consortium, and these kinds of things I think will continue. And I really appreciate Steve for jumping in wholeheartedly, and of course the steering committee for helping this take part.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our second presentation, Human Services Coalition Director Kathy Slaughter will present kind of a summary of some impacts from the recession, the economic downturn in our community.
Thank you.
Now, we did get a handout with our packets. If people have that, it's a three-page handout. So I don't know if you're going to walk through some of those or just kind of highlight a few things. We have about 10 minutes.
Okay. I appreciate the opportunity to come speak here tonight, and I will be taking us back to where we started to talk a little bit more about what Tommy and Bob were talking about earlier, some of the impacts that the agencies are seeing and that their clients are seeing also. What I'll be talking about, and which you've got in your packet, are comments that agencies made at the Homeless and Housing Task Force meeting that was held on February 4th. So back on that, that's a meeting we have six times a year, brings together agencies and individuals who deal with housing and other related issues, and it gives them an opportunity to talk about what they're seeing, to kind of do collaborative planning, and talk about other related issues. On that particular meeting, we did ask agencies to talk about what they're seeing and that because of the economic downturn. And there were a number of agencies who spoke. So the Red Cross, for instance, what they were seeing was an increase in the homeless population. Now, the numbers you're going to see aren't really up higher. Numbers are bed nights that we'll see. But what's happening is because their housing management person and the DSS housing management person were doing a really good job of moving people out of the shelter into housing. But they're seeing higher numbers, more people that are spending less time in the shelter. They're also, and this is none of this is really particularly new, it's just the numbers they're talking about. The good thing is that the housing costs have stayed fairly stable, but the bad thing is that it's very difficult to find housing for people in the city of Ithaca, so they have to move people further and further out, which then circles around into transportation issues. It's very difficult for people to get in, to get to work, to get to food pantries, other things. There were some concerns, though we don't know the specifics yet, about the change in the TCAT schedule and how that might affect people's and clients, especially those who are in rural districts who are trying to get into the city for services. They're also talking about how it's become a little bit more difficult to work with landlords than it was before, where landlords would be a little more able to work with them. Now the landlords themselves are getting some, their lenders are a little less tolerant about it, so people are getting evicted faster than they were before. Neighborhood Legal Services is talking about how they're seeing more foreclosures, just specifically from people who have lost their job, who are actually been cut back hours, because it's a really fine line. That's all sometimes it takes for people in order to be able to not pay their mortgage and not be able to keep their housing. And that's especially, and sometimes it doesn't show up. A lot of people have a number of part-time jobs. And when you get your hours cut back from part-time jobs, that might not show up anywhere else, but it's going to really affect your ability to either keep your housing, keep your health insurance, and a number of other areas. And that's what the agencies are seeing. Catholic Charities. They've already given out 70 security deposits only 5 months into the year. They only have enough to give out 28 more for the entire rest of the year. They've seen a 20% increase in requests for emergency services programs. They've seen both their clothing closet and their personal care products request double in the past year. And they've seen an 85% increase in the number of households that were assisted by their nutrition outreach and education program who were approved for food stamp benefits. And just as a little aside, this particular outreach program the governor has cut all funding for in his proposed budget. Food Bank of the Southern Tier. Agencies report an increase in number of people served, especially large spikes in numbers of new clients. And that's what we're hearing from a lot of agencies. People they have never seen before. People that have never used services before. So it's actually, these people don't know what they're eligible for, really how to go about starting to use services. It takes more time, takes a lot of care to help people who are not familiar with what services are available. Overall, the food pantry statistics show a 24% increase in people served and a 46% increase in seniors served in 2008 compared to 2007. Loaves and Fishes has seen an 8% increase last year over services, but if you just look at the second half of 2008 as opposed to 2007, they've seen a 16% increase in meals served. Salvation Army, 20% increase in people going to Salvation Army for meals, and even the Christmas Assistance Program saw a 22% increase in new people needing holiday help, and those numbers have continued through January and February. The Office for the Aging has seen an increase in applications for heating assistance, including some first-time applicants who have lost income due to layoffs, and major increase in applications for weatherization referrals and assistance. Tompkins Workforce New York, they said their job seekers are increasing steadily, up 24% in the last 6 months. And individuals are keeping, it's taking them longer. Their accounts are open more longer. They're also requesting more services before they're able to obtain employment or training. Also services for basic food and shelter type services. They also said that job openings are being posted at a 23% lower rate than they were 6 months ago. So in Tompkins County Action, they are serving over 1,000 families with housing choice vouchers, and they have a waiting list that is 2 to 3 years long. There are 600 people on the waiting list now for housing vouchers. Their food pantry saw a 35% increase in usage, and they're a heat site. A DSS contracted them to do heat benefits, and they're receiving 50 to 75 phone calls a day for heating assistance benefits.
I'm sorry, who did you say? Who was that?
Tompkins County Action.
Tompkins Community.
Tompkins Community Action.
Yeah. We don't actually have that summary in our packet.
No, I'm just throwing these into
the literature. No, it's lots of summary.
And they've seen about a 10% increase in their request for weatherization, prompt community action. At 211, which we have in our office, which is the information referral services, they are seeing sharp increases in asking for financial assistance, help with heating, health care, and for DSS programs. And just as an aside, the funding for that program has also been cut out of the governor's budget, especially at a time when people, it might be the first thing people do to reach out for services, is call for information referral. Overall, these are just a couple of comments. Staff consumers are having a hard time. People seem to be very confused, very stressed, some rather angry. They've seen people, like I said, that they've never seen before, working people who can't make ends meet. And the agencies themselves are getting hit from a number of different places. They're getting hit from the state, proposed, some federal hits, private contributions are suffering. Foundations have lost money, so that they will say they can't fund as many people as they funded before, and they're seeing an increase in people they have to serve. So they're very concerned about how they're going to be able to meet these needs. There's also programs, and I just want to touch base on that. I know you've heard about the community optional preventive services programs, the COPS funding, and this is for preventive services. That type of funding has been eliminated also from the proposed budget. Those are the kind of preventive services that are going to have that kind of trickle-down effect. These are people who, I mean, it's home visiting programs through the daycare council. It's primary school programs that connect families to the schools. It's parenting classes. If the people aren't connecting with the service providers and going into their home, and that the people tend to become very isolated, and also has a trickle-down effect, and we're all going to see the effects of the lack of funding for programs. So that's so far, and we're pretty early into it. It's just kind of the start of the whole season. So anybody have any questions?
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Nancy. I know there's a lot to pull together in a week after the meeting to get into our packets, but it's
that's okay. I'll come as often as
digested really well and compiled it, summarized it, thankfully. Martha?
Thank you. A couple of things. On the security deposits from Catholic Charities, when Chris was reporting, it had gone through 4 months. In 4 months, they went through 70 vouchers. So just doing the math, saying that the rest of the money has to last 8 months, that's twice. So that would be twice 70. If they just go at the same rate, then they should expect about 140 requests until they get the next batch of IURA money. But they only have money for 28.
There's never enough in a year.
But it also seems to me, when we think about when you're comparing the 2008 stats to, say, 2007, and you're seeing these increases, I think we all know that the really bad stuff didn't start to happen until, say, October. And maybe even later here. I mean, the paper just had Emerson layoff. So even 6 months, I mean, I think when we think about a trajectory of how things were going, I don't know if it goes up or goes down, you know, seems like things are really escalating in terms of the damage and how people are feeling it. So, but one other piece that Tompkins Community Action described at this meeting, this task force meeting, was that they had to change the hours of their food banks so that people could come on their lunch hours. Which is to say, somebody who's working, who's still holding down a job, the paycheck isn't even making it, and they have to squeeze the trip to the food bank in during their lunch hour. And I just thought that
and
just
they're
doesn't
going down a number of jobs, a number
just
of part-time jobs.
Doesn't seem right to me. So.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Carol?
Yeah. Well, it's a question as much as a thank you for compiling this, for bringing it to us. This is all very scary, and I think it's going to be, I mean, obviously we all realize this is going to be really hard as we face the next few years, and we're going to be looking to you for some guidance about, we obviously aren't
going to be able to meet all the need as much as we'd like to. And we'll look to you for some guidance about how we will begin to face and deal with and respond in the best ways that we can. It's not going to be an easy task, and I want to thank you in advance for taking
it
on.
Nancy just reminded me to tell you, right now we're in the middle, and actually Martha helped us on Saturday, of doing our Compass survey, where we're calling, 500 to 600 community residents as a random survey, asking them what they're really seeing with it. We'll call 1,000. She's right. We'll get responses from 500 to 600 from calling about 2,000 people to get responses to what they're seeing out there, what they're seeing in their community, what they're feeling personally. And I think that will give us some good information back that we can use. But Mike was absolutely right. I mean, when you see a 35% jump last year, that took in the fact that at the beginning of the year, everything was pretty, comparatively pretty good. So when you're seeing that kind of jump, if you look at those figures, it shows a much bigger increase in the last half of the year.
Frank Proto?
Yeah, I wish I could say thanks, Kathy. Thanks. When you compare the stats that you're assembling, are you running any comparisons against any other counties to see what they're running up against?
We haven't so far. It's an interesting talk. Once somebody talked that, other counties are seeing, equally, if not higher spikes
in
unemployment, especially. And so, if you start with the unemployment, everything just kind of sifts down from there. We haven't. There are some things, and we talked about the cost funding, that we have put out a word to other counties saying, well, what are you folks doing? How are you coping with this kind of loss for, which is a substantial, substantial amount of money. I mean, and DSS is working very hard to save these programs, but it's difficult when there's so many things proposed to be cut. So
I want to go, if I could, one more. I want to go back to something Carol mentioned. As we go forward with this year, my suspicion is that Health and Human Services is going to be hearing more and more from you during the course of the year. Can you keep us abreast of any talks where there might be consolidations proposed? And also consolidations that might include going beyond county lines. I don't even know if there are any agencies where that would apply to. I mean, I'm sure there is.
Well, sometimes that I've heard about that. Sometimes the state will try to consolidate, regionalize, maybe is a better word, services that get state funding. You've just kind of heard them talk about that. I don't know specifically anybody who's doing it right now, but that's
like
where
a couple of years ago, AIDS were combined and became Southern Tier
right.
Program, so that kind of thing.
I mean, if with a limited pool of funds, if there are any funds from the state, it may be that in order to survive, we may have to do something in a three-county region or a two-county.
Right.
I mean, we're doing something with Cortland on the Tobacco Alliance. And as Mike said, Southern Tier AIDS, some of us that have participated in that over the years with George Ferrari and whatnot.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Will Burbank?
Thank you, Kathy. I just wondering whether you have gotten any sense of people having problems holding onto their homes locally. I've heard, of course, a lot of news nationally, and one estimate that says that 1 in 9 homes nationally is now unoccupied because people can't pay the mortgages. Anecdotally, I'm not aware of that happening locally, but I'm just wondering if you're seeing any signs of stress in that corner.
Just when I talked to Neighborhood Legal Services, and they said that they are seeing, and I did not get the numbers, but they are seeing an increase in foreclosures. And not from, bad lending policies, but just people who are not able to meet because their hours are cut back or their jobs. They've lost their jobs. And, a number of agencies mentioned that people have requested financial help. They can't really afford to have, financial managers, but they're looking for places that they can help them figure out how to budget. For people who have that, they mentioned that seniors were, you know, they were getting calls from seniors who were asking, you know, they're seeing the retirement funds, you know, go down, and, you know, could they talk to somebody about, you know, what they can do about that, or how they can deal with that. So.
Thank you. We're approaching our two-hour mark. Martha?
My sense is, Will, that people do everything they can do to hold on to the house or the apartment, and that's why the food pantries, the demand for food is really spiking.
It's a terrible trade-off.
But that, we heard that from Loaves and Fishes, you know,
right,
a while ago.
Right.
Well, again, thank you very much for compiling
this. I did want to say, Betty was going to come,
actually,
yes, talk about a little about budget, but she actually had to go home. She was a little under the weather today. So she said she would email people with some of her comments, if that was all right with everybody.
And I know that the departments are going to be summary of some of the impacts the departments are feeling. They're going to go to Budget Committee, and then eventually will become a presentation to us as well. So our own internal report will come to us eventually. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In terms of Chair's report, I just want to welcome over 3,000 teachers to our community this week. We have kind of what's called a winter break. This was started a couple of years ago and been very successful. And I think particularly having that in place as the recession begins to tighten people's economic bracket and they're traveling locally, to have that come into our community is a real big help and certainly a great break for educators statewide and out of state as well. At NYSAC, we did, several of us, as Nathan mentioned, did attend, and some materials are out here on the your mailboxes. I particularly draw your attention to a report that NYSAC put together called The Gathering Storm. It has a lot of data about some of the very topics we're talking about this evening. And there's other materials there as well. And I think Joe will speak to this in a minute, but I do want to give a big thank you. TCOG asked that his county, and we volunteered, I think, through Joe, to coordinate a lot of the requests on the federal stimulus package that are going through New York State, and that has been completed, and I think Joe's going to be handing that out, but I want to give particular kudos to Paula Younger and Norma Jane and Ed Marks, particularly, who worked over weekends and this past week as all the municipalities gave some of their proposals together, and we compiled it to send off to the cabinet that the governor has set up to deal with the economic stimulus funding flowing through the state. So with that, we'll move on to, I have no chair's appointments, we'll move on to report from county administrator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to limit my report tonight to an update on the federal stimulus proposal and our response to it.
3 hours instead of...
I'm sorry for the four. If I spend a minute on each of the $787 billion, we'll be here for a long time. Before I forget, though, I am going to request a short executive session at the end of this session to talk about an issue that relates to the negotiation on a land disposition. I think there may be one other issue as well that we want to talk about. So the stimulus itself, Frank is right, the President has signed the bill. It's different than I think we expected it to be when the House first proposed a variation of this bill. I will say that our county was among the first to recognize that there was going to be a stimulus bill, started to cast our thinking in a way that could fit some of the things that we want to do into the baskets of money that were in the early drafts of the bill. By the time it made its way through the House and later to the Senate and then through conference, and there were some significant changes made in the conference negotiations, we have been able to put together a package of projects and programs that we believe responds very appropriately to the stimulus categories that are in the federal plan that, again, was approved today. As you know, our goal was to get something into the state as soon as we possibly could, and from the beginning, our focus was only on the county. We wanted to get our projects to the state because we knew that the state was going to be a decision maker in many of the allocation decisions as soon as possible. And Ed Marks, to his everlasting credit, spent a lot of time to get us prepared to respond to the categories that relate to the county and got off to a good start on the infrastructure items. Later, Paula Younger joined the effort and worked very hard on the programmatic aspects and some of the things that related to elements of the plan other than brick and mortar. And then, as Michael has said, we began to hear through TCOG of other municipalities who said, we have projects too.
We have things that we think would fit the eligibility criteria for the stimulus package, and we just don't know how we should be submitting our request for funding. And in listening to that, we volunteered to compile the projects that were emerging from all the municipalities within Tompkins County and put those into a presentation piece, which you have in front of you, that, again, I think articulates in a very succinct, professional way what our entire community has as their priorities for the use of stimulus money. It includes us, it includes the city, and several of the towns, a few agencies, TC3. So I think we have put together, in a very short time, a remarkably, professional and appropriate response to the federal stimulus plan. The plan that's in front of you is labeled as a working draft. That's what it is right now. But within the next few hours, ideally, over the next day or so, we would like to get something to Albany to let them know what we would like to do in this community. There will be time over the next several days to, if we need to attach priorities, if we need to do some other things, we will be able to do that and we'll have time to do that. But I think our goal right now and our priority is to take a place in line in Albany so that we're considered for funding under the stimulus plan. The package in front of you is the hard copy version that will be colorized and packaged and sent to Albany as soon as possible. And I'd like you to look through it very carefully as quickly as you can. I think since we circulated a list of county projects 2 weeks ago, I think we've incorporated your suggestions, many if not all of your suggestions, in this. But if there are things that you would like to input that you'd like to provide, please do it. But please do it quickly because we'd like to get something out as early as tomorrow if we can. The document is an electronic document as well, so what we send to Albany will be not only a hard copy, but an electronic copy that will allow people in Albany to say what has Tompkins County and the communities within it proposed for certain categories of stimulus aid, energy efficiency, for example. And it will provide a bundled list of energy efficiency-related projects from each of the participating communities that's in this package. I think it's going to be an excellent guide for the state to use in looking at projects that are coming out of our community. It's a summary. It's not an encyclopedia. It's very brief. The goal is to flag projects here to state decision makers and allow them to say, these look like they fit our set of priorities. Give us details. And immediately we can and will. So it's really meant to be a summary guide to them. It's also a guide and a summary that we will present to our state legislative delegation and to our congressional delegation and others in the community to let them know what is on our list of projects that we think fit the stimulus plan. I guess last, in terms of the description here, I think it's our way of making sure that projects that are advocated by smaller governments get their way onto the radar screen in Albany. That's the value added that we provided by doing this packet. And again, I am very proud of the work that Paula and Ed Marks and Norma have done in a very short period of time, working with members of this legislature, with Don Barber and TCOG, and with the mayor of Ithaca to make sure that we have a plan that is as complete as possible given the short period of time that we've had to work on it. So again, I offer this to you. I think it reflects the things that we've talked about over the past several weeks as the stimulus plan has been taking shape. And I would hope again to, as early as tomorrow, get this to Albany and into the hands of a new cabinet the governor has set up in Albany, headed by Tim Gilchrist, that will look at all the requests coming in from throughout New York State. As of last week, there were 1,400 projects that were already in the hands of people in Albany. But to get this document in the hands of Tim Gilchrist and begin to work with the state on trying to have the money
a portion of the money that that ends up in our community. So, again, that's my update on the stimulus plan, and I'm certainly happy to take any questions.
Just two quick comments before I call on people. I believe Ed, Norma, and others have been in contact with Tim Gilchrist about what and Paula about what kinds of package they want and what form, so that it can be as readily accessible by them and divvied up to different agencies and departments as quickly as possible. So this is our best guess is what will be received readily at the state level. Secondarily, this list is going to be discussed in committees. WDIC and PDEQ, I believe, are taking them up. So we have a second shot at discussing them in committees and prior. Did I speak incorrectly?
WDIC.
Oh, F&I, excuse me.
F&I, it's on our list.
F&I. I'm just thinking of what's Wednesday and what's the Thursday. So, on to comments. I had Will first, then Frank, then Martha.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Joe, for a very good report and very good presentation. What's not clear to me is what the prioritization process is going to be. Who does that? Presumably the state is not going to fund even a fraction of these. Do we have the ability to indicate the ones we feel are the most important?
We can do that, and again, I think that's what can happen over the next several days, probably through the committee process, to flag the priorities. Our goal was to get our list to the state now, quickly. I suspect that the transportation infrastructure projects will be flagged by the state as its priority, because for two reasons, frankly. One is they can be done, many of them, very quickly. Two, it also relieves the state of some financial burdens. This is 100% federal money, so the extent that there are projects that are supported with state, federal, and local dollars right now that are on the planning list, the state's better off if those projects happen also. So the state will, I think, put a priority on that. Again, in terms of our establishment of priorities, my suggestion is if we can do that in committee over the next few days, that makes sense, and we can communicate that to the state. The state also, I believe, will have its own set of priorities. What does it want to happen in New York State? So it will look through all these requests, and it will try to put those requests into that state priority framework. I'll close my response to you. Very long answer to your short question. We did hear, I think, very clearly from Tim Gilchrist last week at NYSAC, and several of us listened to Tim, who said, we are going to do our best to geographically distribute this in a very geographically equitable way. And in the discussions that we've had in this room before, our concern has been it's going to be concentrated in a few areas. And places like Tompkins County may not see our share of dollars. I got a very strong sense from the state that they are going to try to geographically balance this, which is why, again, this list of projects from us is real important to get there now.
Frank and Martha?
Joe, thanks. Pardon me. Some of the projects that we have been talking about, particularly highway, road paving and whatnot, receive CHIPS money.
Yes.
Is there any more of an update on what perhaps would have been funded through the state through a program like CHIPS, and what now may be subsidized? Are we going to lose any money as a result of the federal stimulus package? And then I have the second one is how much tweaking. I liked Will's question about prioritizing. How much tweaking are they going to come back? And maybe it's too soon to know.
Yeah, there's a second question. I think it probably is too soon to know. The first question relating to CHIPS.
Or any other program like CHIPS where we're getting...
Today we were told that the governor is now recommending to the legislature that they restore full funding for CHIPS, which is a $500,000 issue for us.
Is that for towns, too?
I believe it's across the board, restoration of CHIPS. So that was an email that I received today. And again, the governor's budget is already cast, but he, I believe, is recommending to the legislature they do it. I think it relates to the stimulus. The other thing that will happen here, and Dooley has raised an issue about the airport, and including airport projects in this. As told to us by the state last week at NYSAC, the federal government's goal right now is to get as much money into projects as it possibly can, as soon as it can, which means
projects that were scheduled to happen 3 years from now, 5 years from now, at the airport or in roads and bridges, they want those projects to happen now. So it could be that we had every expectation of receiving money for the airport or for a bridge in 3 years under the transportation plan, but those are all being accelerated to get money into circulation quickly. So I don't know that we'll see any loss of money, but I do think it just takes the projects that we wanted to do over the next 5 years and moves them all forward.
Is the state going to take an administrative fee?
Don't know yet.
Martha.
Governor Patterson at NYSAC last week seemed to be saying that they really wanted to push the money through, that they understood that counties and I guess towns, et cetera, would be more able to actually get the money working quicker than just the state keeping it. Now, we could have told them that, but I think one of the big stories here is that TCOG cooperated.
Absolutely.
On putting this together. I mean, this is, and at the meeting that we had last month, leading up to this whole process, it was really clear. Everybody was trying to figure, well, how about my broadband project? Yeah, but my broadband project is better than yours. And so the fact that we've got this collaborative document is fantastic. I think it certainly elevates the importance of TCOG among the municipalities' own perceptions of the organization, and I think because of the great work of staff has certainly made people appreciate the county in a very real way. So I'm glad that that's happened. How you've got in the back here Human Services Coalition and Intermunicipal Water Commission and Tompkins Community Action, but I don't see them. Are those mentioned in other municipal requests?
I think those are separate and apart, and I think they have their own pages toward the end. Of the
agencies and authorities has about four or five
page
pages.
57.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
And I think, again, Joe mentioned this grid. This is an electronic grid that can be sorted in so many different ways. The agency can take out transportation projects. I think that's really ahead of the curve for most submissions. So thank you all. Dooley?
I am still not sure what a 90-day project means.
What a what? Dooley?
What a 90-day project as opposed to a 180-day project. What it means, is it that you'll be ready to let bids in 90 days after you get news that it's been chosen, or what?
I don't think anybody has defined exactly what that means, but I think yours is as good of a definition as anybody. Once that green light goes on, they want to know that if they've said, we want you to do Project A, within 90 days, contracts will be let, and work will be essentially commencing.
And just a quick follow-up to that. Bill Sesney stopped me after a meeting we had in Forest Home about a week ago and said he's already pigeonholed certain contractors to say, give us some priority in your window this construction season. We don't exactly know which projects, but so he's already pre-planning to be giving them bidding documents soon. But go ahead.
I wanted to ask about the information technology entries under each of the three time periods. Under 90 days, it says do a needs assessment countywide. Under 180 days, it talks about, I don't know what it's saying. And then under 2 years, it says deploy.
Right. Yeah.
So it's the 180 days that doesn't make any sense to me.
It's a good question. Here's what has happened over the last 2 weeks with that particular issue. The creative juices have been flowing. So there was a time when this report said, let's do an assessment of broadband needs countywide, and that'll be the first thing. We know we can commission a study very quickly. So that was the 90-day plan. And that would take some time to actually get on the ground, so I think that was really the impetus for the 2 years. So first study and then implement 2 years later. What has happened over the past week or so is that Lee Shurtleff with others has started to think about how we use this communication infrastructure that we've invested $20 million in, the towers.
Right.
and figure out whether we can put that to use in expanding access to broadband in parts of the county that don't have access right now. So you will now see, I think it's in the 180-day plan, that if this idea works, if it pans out, that we could actually begin to implement parts of that within the next, within a half a year.
Now, without really having a countywide plan? That's what I'm confused about.
Well, I think we still want, we want to make sure that we have a belt and suspenders, because we believe that broadband is a critical need. This is, I think, maybe the only belt and suspenders approach we've taken in this, where we want to do it, we want to do a countywide needs assessment. We think that there might be a solution, call it a fast-track solution, using our existing infrastructure. So we want to make sure that we have funding for that. But if that doesn't pan out, we want to make sure that we can later on do something that we believe is going to be a lot more of an expensive approach than what Lee is looking at right now. So it really is belt and suspenders.
I guess if the 180-day version is cheaper, why on earth that wouldn't be part of the two-year version? That I don't understand either. But waiting till we've actually looked at the whole question seems much more sensible to me than going off in one direction, which may or may not fit into the other. I don't know.
Anyway, it may well be.
That's for committee work. I
yes.
understand.
This may be belt, suspenders, spandex, and Velcro. I mean, we're putting everything in there. I think we've got Carol next, and Frank, then Mike Sigler.
Yeah, I want to thank Joe and Ed and Paula and everybody who has.
And Norma.
And Norma. Yeah. Everybody who has worked on this. And then TCOG also. I managed to catch the last section of that meeting, and it really was truly beautiful to see all of our municipalities come out and realize that we need to work together on this. So I noted and appreciated that you opened your remarks, Joe, with the fact that we really jumped on the eight ball, sort of out ahead of the pack, in recognizing that we needed to do this, which has put us in good stead. I do have a couple of concerns that we not fall behind the eight ball now as we move forward from here. And those are, first, that I'm a little concerned that this is becoming such a large wish list that, you know, I mean, it is a wish list, not a plan, and it can't become a plan in the time frame that we have. But that, you know, is it growing too large to be useful to the state? On the other hand, I heard pretty clearly on Monday that the state already had 1,400 items on the list, and on Wednesday I saw that in the newspaper, I believe, that there are 1,900 projects on the list, and on Friday I saw over 2,000, and that was Friday. It's now Tuesday, and I think that a lot of other counties and municipalities are probably catching up, and now I'm worried surpassing us in getting their lists in. So I do have concerns, and I'm a little dismayed to hear that we're now sending, we were going to get this out last Friday, so I'm a little dismayed that it's now going back to committees, you know, and hope that we don't delay this any longer getting it up there. So that's one concern, and then the other is just that I also heard pretty clearly that once the broad categories are determined, that the money will end up going, in many cases, to various state departments, divisions, to be dispersed according to the ways that they set, and that we should not ignore the need to get each the pieces separately to the department, so that we can't count on each department to go through everybody's lists to pick out the pieces that fit their programs. And so I'm just concerned that we do that. And Norma also, you know, heard all of that. And
yes, and that's the value of the electronic system, because we can get to the individual departments. Those things that relate to those departments with the press of a button. And that's our plan to do that. with respect to your first comment about going to committee, my goal is not to get out in front of this legislature. I want this to be absolutely transparent. I want you to see what's in here. I think we've done a pretty good job in airing it, getting comments back in. I would very much like to move forward as early as tomorrow to get a document to the state with an opportunity to perfect that, if we need to, through the committee process later this week. That's my goal, and if the legislature agrees, then I think by tomorrow we will have a final document that we can get to Albany. And I think we'd also like to let the public know as early as tomorrow or Thursday what we're doing too, to kind of amplify the effort.
Let me just speak to that briefly. This document would have hit send on Friday if it hadn't been for one significant municipality being delayed in getting their materials to us. So that was a city. So I agree with Joe that we should do a two-part process. We hit send tomorrow because we have had a lot of time to vet this, the county portion of this, and we need also do a secondary process through committee, speaking about priorities, and if that has to come to the full legislature for a vote, fine. But we do a double action. So we get it to the powers that be, to get it in the pecking order, so to speak, and then we can prioritize and resend or send priority listings for the county after that. I have Mike Sigler, Martha Dooley, then Kathy.
My question is pretty quick, Joe. I mean, reading through all this, I see a consistent theme throughout, and that's water, 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 like every town. I'm assuming that that's probably going to be the same with every town.
I would assume so, yes.
I'm wondering, do you foresee that maybe the state will just say, we've got this much, we're going to start up almost like a block grant, and kind of send it out that way? This much is dedicated toward water, this much is toward broadband. Or do you think they're going to be more specific?
I think they'll be more specific. I think in the case of water and sewer, the Environmental Facilities Corp has a ranking of projects. So if you want to submit a project, a water project for low interest financing by the state, they prioritize that. Mm-hmm. And I think a couple of things may happen with additional federal money to them. That priority line will go farther down, so there'll be more projects eligible for low interest loans. I think part of the water and sewer money will be low interest loans. Mm-hmm. We're just beginning to hear that there may be some grant money that is there for water and sewer as well. And I don't think even the state is sure yet how they're going to allocate that grant money.
Martha.
I think you should hit send tomorrow. I've thought about this a lot. Nobody's going to open this tomorrow and say, okay, here's your check. They're going to add it to the pile in chronological order. So, you know, at the point when somebody does open it and says, okay, by then we will have gotten them the refined version. And I think, I mean, I really think that that's right. They won't even notice that we had a second version of it. And so I really think it should go as soon as you can get it out the door. Because for one thing, I mean, if PDAC discusses something and maybe suggests changes, and then F&I suggests something, makes changes, then what happens if the changes aren't the same, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we should go ahead and send it, and then we can develop at, you know, a little bit more leisure what we want to do.
Great. I'll ask for a sense of the body in a minute, but I have Dooley and then Kathy.
I believe it was the city's part of the package that we were waiting for. Sorry. On Friday. And I think I heard that one reason it took longer is that the city prioritized its pieces. But looking at this document, I don't see anything reflecting prioritization. So that surprised me. At the MPO Planning Committee meeting earlier today, there was a large discussion about how best to prioritize things so that each municipality who's part of the MPO gets one thing on top in the top list. So their work will come to a special meeting of the MPO Policy Committee next week, where the proposal will be to separate out this two-page list of infrastructure projects into Tier 1 and Tier 2. Each municipality will have one project in Tier 1 and all the rest will be in Tier 2. Those are the projects I think we'll be talking about at F&I also. But prioritization is terribly important in my view, and that's something that this document doesn't say. So if it's the will of this body that this working draft go forward, I would like it to say very upfront, very clearly, if you want to leave working draft on, that's fine. I doubt that you want to. That this is this will be replaced as soon as possible by a document from the Tompkins County portion, at least, will be replaced by a document that has gotten the legislature's approved prioritization included, or something like that, so that they know to look for something else. Otherwise, we could send something else, and it's not clear to me where it will wind up.
Kathy, then Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is awesome. Great, great job, great teamwork. There isn't anything in here that I think we don't need or that wouldn't help us in some way. The point is to get some money back into the community. In terms of prioritizing, I love the idea and of doing that, and I feel some urgency. And what occurs to me is that this, regardless of how nice we make it look, whether we take working draft on or not, regardless of how we prioritize it, it is a work in progress. And part of the reason is because we're not exactly the ones at the federal level that are going to be deciding the priorities. Some of this stuff I've already heard, you know, has been diluted or diminished, but there's no reason we should take it out because we're not sure. And in terms of water, Mike, you were singing my tune. I love the idea of the water infrastructure stuff in the county being dealt with. Oh my gosh, I wouldn't want to pass that up. The Green Jobs Initiative with like Tyke, I'm on the TCA board, and we're just thrilled at the prospect of educating youth for some green job stuff. The solar panels, come on. All of this is the energy efficiency stuff. It's good stuff. As much as I would like to work on this in committee, and I'm sure that we will, I don't really have a problem with sending it on. I think that it can be dealt with because things are going to be changing. So good job. I'm with you. Let's see what happens next.
Hi, Frank and Leslie. I'm going to propose some wording for a sense of the body.
Joe, just from a practical standpoint, 62 counties in the state, everybody's vying for a piece of the action. Last time I counted, there were 50 states. My suspicion is everybody's vying for a piece of the action. Has anybody thought about what the mobilization criteria for this is going to be? Whether there's a workforce available to, regardless of how these projects are prioritized, whether there's a workforce available to work, whether there's material like asphalt that's going to be adequate. My suspicion is, based on what you said, every county is going to have some public works projects in this mix. There's just so much concrete, there's just so many 2x4s and whatnot to go around. Is that how, do you think that's how the state may look at the 90-day projects? Shovel-ready may not really mean shovel-ready. It may mean that's what we're thinking about. Is there any thought being given to material?
I haven't heard that. But I will tell you that I think the states, I think the 90 days is a real thing, and I believe that there are, the federal government is going to have some kind of sanction power to pull that money back if it doesn't get spent as quickly as the state has proposed. So the state's going to be motivated to get as much of that money into projects as it can, as quickly as it can.
Now, the fear there, I'm afraid to say, is some of it will get wasted just to pump it into the system.
Less than that, Jim.
Thanks.
You know, I just remember what I was going to say.
We'll come back to you if you remember.
As I'm thinking here, I do want to say, if I had my drudges, this would have been gone already. And I hear you talking about whether prioritization did happen. As I'm looking at this, I'm seeing some things that are not here. So I know the city did put some effort into thinking through, under each of the categories, what would they want to have happen. There are a number of things that are no longer here. It kind of upsets me because as I read it, the categories, I found places where I thought I can make a case for certain things to fit. And I already had this conversation with Joe, but I'll look for the second round to come through and then work on that. But I would say it needs to go out.
If I could just quickly follow up on that. This isn't all-inclusive. There will be a large amount of federal dollars that are pushed into the system by formula, by existing formula. So, for example, Workforce Investment Group, they will realize more money just by virtue of formula. The federal government will put additional dollars into a program, and it will shoot out by formula to individual communities. And we will benefit by that, too.
Joe, that's why I like you, because you can actually read what I need you to say.
Jim Dennis.
Mike, I want to join you in getting a sense of the group. And before we do what Tompkins County does best, talk about it till it's almost dead and some other county is already building their project.
We're
going to send our final document in.
Okay. I would propose this document is ready to send tomorrow. That we also, in parallel track, send to committees for the eventual prioritization process. What Dooley has proposed regarding wording that would accompany this, I would delegate to the county administrator and deputy who are here and have heard this conversation about how to say X will follow, priority projects for Tompkins County. I would not do that on the fly tonight. I would propose the working draft is taken off, because when I see working draft, I think this goes on the bottom of the pile. But that's my own, I'll let them, that's my sense, that's my proposal. If people are ready to, comment on that, or all those in favor of allowing the administration to do that tomorrow, please raise your hand. Okay, it looks unanimous with Kathy out of the room. Thank you. Any other comments before we move on to our regular agenda?
My final comment on this is that I think we should print out the hard copy in like lime green, so that way when it comes to the pile, it'll be like white paper, bam.
All right, with little light up diodes on the side or something, and a laser light show. Thank you, Joe, for that.
Thank you all very much.
County Administrator, that was your short version of the report?
That was.
Okay. On to Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
No report. I would like a brief executive session on a litigation.
Okay, thank you. David Squires, Finance Director.
Can we take a break at some point?
Yeah, I'm going to ask for a break right when the appointments come up. There's no county staff here to report. Are there any resolutions?
No report.
No report. No report, yeah. Last time was so exciting about our lowest bond.
We wait with bated breath.
Resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda. I believe there's an appointment to be added from about COFA. Frank, do you want to add that to the agenda?
Yes, I'd like to add the appointment of. I'd like to enter in the appointment of Mary Oltz to the County Office for the Aging Board of Directors.
Is there a second for that? Less than seconds. All in favor of adding that to our agenda tonight? Any opposed? That's unanimous. So before we move to the consent agenda, do people want a 5-minute break? Okay. 5-minute break. Back at 8:05.